Welcome to the Global Council podcast, where you can hear the GC team discuss and debate topical developments in public policy and regulation from around the world.
Hello, my name is Megan Stagman, and I'm an associate in the tech, media and telecoms practice at Global Council. Today, we're going to be discussing the emerging tech sector in Eastern Europe, particularly recent political developments in Ukraine and Belarus, and potential forecasts for the future. Joining me, I've got Alex van der Woesten here, who's an associate in our Central and Eastern Europe team. So we've been seeing more and more countries upgrade their tech credentials in the past year, making the often difficult step to become an innovation-based economy rather than remaining dependent on manufacturing. For example, in Central Europe, Estonia has become well-renowned recently as being a hotbed for digital entrepreneurship. It's famously spawned household names like Skype and TransferWise. Similarly, Slovenia is taking over the Council of the EU's rotating presidency in July, which will make it much more politically important. And they promised to prioritize AI legislative development, which the country has its own AI credentials on as well, being home to a research center on AI. So we can see how countries that weren't typically key players in this space are becoming more and more so. And so that kind of begs the question, what about looking further east into Eastern Europe? It's a region that's far less understood in terms of its tech ambitions, but has come under more scrutiny recently. So for example, Tim Draper, who's a billionaire Silicon Valley venture capitalist and whose investments cover some of the most important tech companies in the world, like Tesla and Twitter, he recently forecast a so-called golden age for Eastern European technology. So with a focus on Belarus and Ukraine, we're going to have a little bit of a look further into that today. And as I say, glad to be joined by Alex, who's somewhat of an expert in this space. So perhaps I could start out with the first question, Alex, about what is the current status of tech development in the region? How would you describe the current landscape?
Thank you very much, Megan, for this excellent introduction. So let me start with a bit of context, a bit of historical context. So yeah, probably due to the high level technical education from the Soviet era and the the general focus on technical education, I think of engineering, maths, physics in Eastern Europe more broadly, a lot of technically skilled people are now employed in the IT sector in the wider region. So yeah, basically the region has a lot of human capital, and at the same time there is something that you can call a brain drain since the 1990s. So many educated specialists have been leaving due to economic troubles, due to political instability, etc. At the same time, there were also successful cases, successful companies, homegrown companies in countries like Belarus and Ukraine during the early 2000s. And the government, the governments in the region seeing this, they realized that, the IT sector has potential and they basically need to undertake steps to support its growth. In 2017, very interestingly, the Belarusian government signed a decree which permitted the establishment of the High Technologies Park, which is an IT park. Basically, it's a legal regime for IT companies. So its residents, they receive tax benefits, they have investment protection, there are simplified procedures for hiring staff, etc. And yeah, the aim is twofold. So on one hand, to boost domestic IT, and also to attract foreign companies to the country in question. So in Belarus, this has proven to be a success. So it had attracted a lot of domestic companies and foreign companies that became residents. And yeah, soon after, countries in the region, if you will, start to replicate this model. So Kazakhstan in 2018 opened the Astana Hub, which is a startup ecosystem. So a kind of one-stop shop with currently 500 IT companies, many of whom are startups. And residents include both domestic companies, but also known foreign, international companies like Glovo, so the Barcelona-based delivery app. And the Astana hub basically promised, well, the Kazakhstan government said that the legislation, so the framework of the Astana hub, will not change until 2066, which is also a source for stability. So companies know what time frame they need to take into account. Then in Uzbekistan, also a year later, in 2019, an IT park was opened there, with also domestic companies. And the idea is that it would also very much boost the development of the IT sector there. And now there's Tajikistan, which also kind of voiced the intention of developing a similar IT park. So very interesting initiatives here in the Central Asia region, but still much of the focus has been on Belarus and now on Ukraine, which has recently submitted, the government has recently submitted legislation also to develop its own IT ecosystem. And yeah, rightly so, because Belarus, as we know, has been the place where protests started last year, and the IT sector played an important a key role there, and in a way fell out of favor with the government. And what you saw there was that there were certain consequences for the IT sector, which in turn prompted relocation of IT specialists to Ukraine and also neighboring countries. So yeah, in summary, a lot of attention to political turmoil, which is now in Belarus and Ukraine, in Belarus specifically, but also initiatives in Ukraine, and lots of interesting initiatives similar to the high technology spark you see popping up now in Central Asia. So just to give a big overview there.
Okay, thanks. And perhaps we can turn back to the issue of the kind of upheaval in Belarus in a second. But before we do, I wonder, you've mentioned IT parks a few times. Perhaps we can take a step back and talk about what exactly are these? Why would companies want to be attracted to that area? What incentives do the governments hope to instill through creating those?
Yeah. So the IT parks, basically you could break it down in three components. So the intention of IT parks, firstly, to provide tax benefits to its residents. So that's a way of attracting foreign residents, foreign companies. Also, it's also a motivation for domestic companies to become a resident. So you can think of significantly lower corporate taxes, exit capital taxes, which would also in turn boost the development of the domestic economy more broadly. Then there is kind of simplified procedures for hiring staff, because that is an issue in some of the countries. How exactly does the employer-employee relation work there? How do contracts work? So the initiatives of the many IT parks, basically, they set out a clear procedure for hiring staff and also reducing corruption risks and minimizing potential bureaucracy processes. Thirdly, and very importantly, so thinking of the political situation in many countries in the region. So what IT parks try to do is offer some sort of investment protection. And you can think here of trying to avoid unwarranted state oversight in the IT sector. So there is the risk for many companies that the authorities would start criminal proceedings into their handling, some sort of problems with the financial transactions. So the idea of IT parks is to offer investment protection. And you can think here of ways to make sure that law enforcement cannot intervene into the business of IT companies without court approval, but also more specific legislation that would really boost the venture capital and attract foreign investors to the country.
Okay, thanks. And interesting to hear you talk about these because it's obviously not a trend that is specific to the region. Silicon Valley is a very famous example, but equally technology parks have played a pretty critical role in the development of the tech sector in, say, for example, India and Pakistan. But I think seeing quite so many of them in all of these neighboring countries that you describe in Eastern Europe is certainly interesting. So perhaps we can talk about the three things that you've just outlined. So the kind of unwarranted state intervention, the tax benefits and the hiring practices. The first one is particularly interesting, I think, because, and perhaps you can explain this a bit more to our listeners, the situation that we've seen in Belarus in the past 6 months seems to suggest that there hasn't been this protection from unwarranted state intervention. And if anything, it's been quite an acute risk that potentially is going to spook off the tech sector and achieve the contrary. So could you tell us a bit more about what happened there and whether you think that's going to have a long lasting effect or whether it was a one-off incident?
Absolutely. So, yeah, like I said earlier, protests have swept through Belarus following the presidential elections in August last year, and basically what we've seen since August is that the IT sector has increasingly fallen out of favor with the authorities. They are thought to have played a key role in the protest movement, and to be some sort of hub of liberal views and practices that are that basically differ from the rest of the Belarusian economy. So what we've seen as a result is that that some IT companies have been investigated by the authorities, and there have been cases open against them. Some cases had to do with tax fraud. And what is interesting is that some of these cases can directly contradict the norms or the legislation for the high technologies park that has been set out in 2017. So this is really also a sign for domestic and foreign companies that that's not all, although the government may have made promises earlier not to change the legislation or not to act against it, this has happened due to the political situation. So this did give a signal to the Ukrainian government, the Ukrainian authorities, that that is necessary to offer some sort of protection from unwarranted state oversight from law enforcement or security forces that may interfere in the IT business. So what has been proposed in recent Ukrainian legislation, for example, is, like I said, so without the approval of the prosecutor general or his deputies, no investigation into IT companies will be allowed. So that's with the eye set on Belarus, that's a very important part of that legislation, and that could definitely be a deal breaker, if you want.
Interesting. Also interesting what you're saying, seem to be saying that what's happened in Belarus might almost make other countries take conscious efforts to avoid that situation, and therefore it might be the exception in the region, despite, as you say, having been one of the forerunners previously. So the second point you raised was preferential tax regimes, which is interesting as well. I assume this is kind of creating special economic regions to attract investment. But my question is kind of, are these primarily aimed at boosting just domestic IT? Or, as you say, is this about trying to create a hub for international investment as well? Because that seems to be one of the big issues that the region has had thus far.
Right. Yeah. So regards to the taxes, there is no distinct separation between taxes that are aimed at domestic companies or foreign companies. So many of the IT parks, so if you look now at Belarus and Ukraine specifically, they foresee significantly lower corporate taxes, no profit taxes on profits, and in the case of Ukraine, exit capital taxes. So the idea is here not to separate between domestic and foreign companies, but there is, if you look more broadly, there is a discussion about whether foreign companies are actually whether their interests are better protected than the interests of domestic companies. For example, the Ukrainian legislation that has been proposed now contains a non-compete agreement, so which basically means that if, for example, a foreign company opens an R&D in Ukraine and develops some sort of innovation, some sort of innovative application, such a non-compete clause would basically prevent a local company from luring an employee out of an R&D office and copying this this innovative application. So the idea is that, as some members of the domestic IT community argue, is that this could protect the interests of foreign companies that will become residents of this IT park, and not really support the domestic IT companies. So there are specific provisions in legislation that seem to be biased, according to some. But with regards to taxation, there is a level playing field. Yeah.
Okay, great. And then I think there was a third and final benefit that you mentioned, which was around hiring and employment. This is obviously a politically charged issue in any region. I mean, in the West, we have a lot of dispute around the kind of gig economy sector, how companies like Uber tackle this issue. So what is Eastern Europe looking at doing in this space?
Absolutely. So in what you now see in specifically, I'm referring to Ukraine because the legislation is in development now, and there have been amendments published recently. So you really see there what best practice have been taken from other countries, basically, and that's an interesting case to compare it with. Then, so what you see there is a newly proposed model, the so-called gig model for hiring employees. Before, over the last 20 years or so, the IT sector has mostly hired staff as individual contractors. So this means that employers do not have to pay significant social contributions. So basically it leaves some sort of, the idea is that this leaves some sort of hole in the state budget. While the IT sector has been growing, they have not really been contributing in terms of the state budget because of the contractual forms. So this new gig model would regulate in a new way the relation between employers and employees. So it would take the IT sector out of the informal economy. But at the same time, there will still be the taxes that have to be paid, the social contributions that will have to be paid of the employees will still be relatively low. IT companies are still reluctant to support this, because they feel that they think that the system has worked, although there have been flaws, it has worked fine for them in the last 20 years or so. The IT sector has grown with these contractual forms, and that any sort of regulation or any sort of initiatives from the government in this area, they feel that this could really impede growth and not really contribute to the further development of the sector. So there are concerns still about this.
Okay, great. And that kind of leads me on to some of the final questions that I wanted to ask, which is that you've raised, there's quite a lot of skepticism about, a lot of the benefits of these IT parks and the growth of the sector more generally in Eastern Europe. So how do you foresee this playing out? Are the issues that Belarus has had in recent months going to set a new issue for the region in terms of its tech development? Or do you think that is just an exception, a bump in the road, and actually there's a greater trajectory of growth that's going to happen here?
That's a very good question. It's hard to predict, of course, how the situation in Belarus will play out. It goes without saying that it has seriously affected the IT sector there, and as a result, many IT companies, many Belarusian IT companies, have started thinking about relocating to neighboring countries, including Ukraine, also countries in the wider region. So it will be interesting to see whether this will have, exactly like you said, a kind of a longer term impact. In terms of what's happening, what will happen in Ukraine specifically, I would think that there's some potential for real growth there. Also taking into account Ukraine's intention of approaching EU best practices and their idea of playing with potential EU membership. So there is real kind of political impetus, if you will. And that could really develop the sector.
That, I think, brings to the fore a very important question, which is where Eastern Europe finds itself in terms of its geopolitical alliances. I assume that there is quite a strong influence of China, but then, as you say, for countries like Ukraine, the lure of EU membership presumably pulls it in a slightly different direction. So where do you see Eastern Europe fitting into this? Or is it an overly simplistic view to suggest that there's a homogenous approach to geopolitical relationships?
No, I think you're right saying that the Chinese influence should not be underestimated. So, I mean, when we talk about Central Asia, it has been voiced, for example, by the Kazakhstan president, that Chinese support for the creation of IT parks and the IT sector there would be very much appreciated. And it will be interesting how this would play out in Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, for example. Again, returning to Ukraine, the EU factor will play an important part in the next coming years, and would also potentially, like I said, boost the IT sector there. With Belarus, it's harder to say what's going to happen, but let's hope for the best. On the overall, these are kind of very different factors for all different sides of the regions. And it will be interesting to see how this will really affect the IT sector there.
Great. And just one final question from me, which is that a lot of our discussion today has been dominated by talk of IT parks, which seems to be a pretty prominent lever by the governments in this region for trying to incentivize growth. But do you think that there are gaps in terms of other areas that ought to also be drawn upon? So, I mean, the tech sector is commonly supported in other countries by, for example, public sector digitization or greater regulatory certainty around data use, for example. Do you think that any of that is currently lacking in the region, or is that also emerging?
That's a very good point. It depends, I guess, also where you're looking at, which part of the region you're focusing on. In Ukraine, for example, the development of the this IT park or this IT ecosystem legislation goes hand in hand with actual digitalization efforts and legislation to develop Ukraine develop Ukraine's e-governance. So the digitalization of its public sector. This is all interconnected. And if you look at Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan, you see that the IT parks were developed there following efforts to basically boost the connectivity, the regional or the domestic connectivity, so boosting the internet infrastructure. So these things go hand in hand, and the government doesn't see it as a separate exercise. So the digitalization of its public sector goes hand in hand with development of its commercial IT sector. that's definitely true.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think maybe to bring this back full circle, we started out talking about Estonia and the way that that very quickly developed. And I think that's a prime example of, I think now 99% of their public services have been digitized in recent years. And that's been a real driver of tech growth in the region.
Absolutely. And yeah, that's true.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much. And to our listeners, as always, if your business or your investment is exposed to any of these issues, please don't hesitate to get in touch with us. You can find contact details for both myself and Alex and our sectoral teams on the Global Council website, which is www.global-council.com, or via the link that's in the podcast notes. Thank you very much for listening.
For more insights, blogs and analysis, you can visit our website www.global-council.com and subscribe to our mailing list. And you can follow us on Twitter at global_council.